You're listening to UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell, and this is The Smartest Doctor in the Room, where real medicine meets real answers. Each episode, I bring you honest conversations with some of the brightest minds in health and medicine. Let's get started. Toxic mold exposure in the home is dangerous to your health. I see patients every week in my practice who are suffering from the effects of toxic mold. And in many cases, they were living in a home where they didn't even know mold was present. That's why I recommend to patients who suspect they are ill, possibly from toxic mold exposure, to obtain a test from Immunolytics, a company that specializes in mold detection with simple mold plates for your home or office. The mold plates are put in various rooms of your home and then left open for an hour. They are then closed up and you observe them for 5 days. If the mold plates show growth, you can send them back to Immunolytics and the company will analyze them and interpret the results for you. Please see the link in the show notes to order your mold plates from Immunolytics and use the code SMARTESTDOC to get a 5% discount. Today's podcast is on a sensitive topic of vaginitis, but we have some exciting news on new at-home testing and treatment. And for you male listeners, don't turn off the podcast. You may learn some important news for you as well. Up until recently, if a woman had the symptoms of possible vaginal infection, she would have to make an appointment with her gynecologist, and unfortunately sometimes have to wait a few weeks, or self-treat herself with over-the-counter medication creams and prayed that it worked. The exciting news is that things have changed for the better. My guest today, Dr. Kate McLean, is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist who is the chief medical officer of a company called Evie that enables women to get fast, easy diagnosis and treatment for vaginitis in their own home without going to a doctor's office. The other big news I want to discuss today as well was reported in the New York Times science section, and it was based on a publication in the New England Journal of Medicine, probably the most esteemed medical journal in the world, is that common vaginitis, bacterial vaginosis, now should involve treating male partners as well. So we're going to get into all of this, and I'm really excited to welcome Dr. Kate McLean to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here to talk about this really important topic. Vaginal discomfort is one of the leading reasons that people with vaginas seek healthcare advice in this country. And the sad part is that more than half the time they're misdiagnosed, and the majority of the time their symptoms return after treatment. And so this is close to my heart for that reason. It's a major pain point for patients across our country in all sorts of age groups and from all kinds of backgrounds. And so Evie, the company I work for, is really taking steps to try to improve that.
Right. I think it's really exciting. Like in medicine today, obviously things have changed dramatically. We have a lot of convenient home testing kits. I mean, people can test for the flu. They can test for COVID. They can test for strep. And of course, for years, women have been testing for pregnancy with home tests. But it isn't until recently with a company like Evie that's available now to test for a range of possible infections causing vaginitis, ranging from yeast to bacteria. So Dr. McLean, my first big question for you though, is the Evie test as good as a test that you would get in your gynecologist's office?
And I'm gonna argue that it's actually even better, and here's why.
Okay.
So back when I trained as an OBGYN, the most common way that we learned to diagnose vaginitis was to take a swab, put it on a slide, and look at it under a microscope in our own office. For the most common vaginal infection called bacterial vaginosis, and 30% of people with vaginas might have bacterial vaginosis, or BV as we call it for short, at any given time. So it's extremely common. This is bothersome to a lot of people a lot of the time. And AMSEL criteria, looking at a slide and trying to figure out if somebody has BV, published studies have shown that the sensitivity for BV, meaning the chance that you're actually going to correctly identify it, is 37%. So it's pretty abysmal.
Yeah.
Now, since I trained, there have been some advancements in technology. So there are lab offered tests, meaning you collect a swab in the office and send it off to a particular lab for analysis. And this is done by many commercial labs, many hospital-based labs.
How does Evi differ from, I guess, something like the new swab, which is a PCR, I guess, DNA
Right.
test? Is it similar? Because those are good tests, but you have to go to a gynecologist to get them done.
You're
Good.
absolutely right that the most common laboratory conducted tests for vaginitis in the United States currently are PCR-based tests. And to simplify this, essentially these PCR tests look for a very short list of bacteria and they tell you, was this bacteria present? Yes or no. The average number of bacteria related to BV that are tested for is like three or four. And so they'll go looking for three or four types of bacteria they know are associated with BV and say, do we see these with PCR tests or not? Here's the problem. A condition like BV is not just caused by four different kinds of bacteria. It can potentially be caused by a list of bacteria as long as my arm, like a very large number of bacteria. And many of these PCRs don't even test for Gardnerella, which is one of the most common bacteria to cause BV. So the false negative rate with PCR testing for BV is very high for that reason.
So just want to clarify for the listeners too. BV, unlike, let's say, Candida, yeast infections, is a sort of a consortium of different bacteria. They've never really identified one specific bacteria. That's why
Correct.
they call it bacterial vaginosis. They don't say, a specific name of a organism.
Correct. It is, to get technical about it, a shift towards what we in technical terms call dysbiosis or an abnormality within the vaginal microbiome as a whole. The
Okay.
vaginal microbiome is the ecosystem of microbes that live in the vagina and typically protect the vagina from infection.
Right.
The most common type of favorable bacteria are lactobacilli. And there are different types of lactobacilli, but they take up space on the vaginal wall. They even produce compounds that can kill harmful bacteria.
Okay.
And when something like bacterial vaginosis takes over, a lot of times these lactobacilli are in lower populations, so they're in low numbers, and they
Yeah.
allow these BV bacteria to take up space and set up shop. And so it's like the entire vaginal ecosystem has shifted away from its normal state where you would see mostly lactobacillus species. And has shifted towards allowing bacterial vaginosis related microbes to run the storefront, so to speak. So because it's just a much more complicated picture, diagnosing BV with something like a PCR test is inherently really challenging. And so I like this analogy where if you are in a dark room and you are looking for BV, a PCR test hands you a flashlight and says you can look in this corner and see if you see BV, and you can look in that corner and see if you see BV. In contrast, the technology that Evie utilizes, which is called next generation metagenomic sequencing, sequences the genome of every microbe that is present in the sample. So when you're standing in the dark room, it's like you're turning on the lights in the whole room and seeing what's there with you. So it's fundamentally a different way of evaluating BV. And you're going to be much less likely to have a false negative rate, meaning somebody comes to you with symptoms of BV, the chance with a PCR test that the PCR test is going to be negative and show nothing useful is fairly high. But when you're looking at every single microbe that's present, you're much more likely to get an explanation for somebody's
Okay, so you
symptoms.
think it's a better test. Now, let me ask you, as long as we're getting to some of the nitty-gritty here, when you're doing a home test, I mean, if somebody's doing a COVID test, a strep throat test, usually you would think it's pretty simple, but sometimes people don't swab properly. So this is also a little bit more delicate, putting a swab into the vaginal area. Is there a higher percentage of patients that are not doing correctly? Do they get to see some type of video or instructions how to do that properly?
There are very clear instructions. It's a 20-second at-home vaginal swab. I would argue that it's technically easier than doing a COVID test,
Okay.
because for to do a COVID test, you've got to get to a certain depth within the nasal passage, and that can sometimes be really uncomfortable. Many people with vaginas are used to dealing with their vaginas. They're used to using tampons. They are used to
Okay.
using like utilizing their vagina. And so this, I would argue, is easier. You just need to put the swab in enough to cover like the Q-tip end of it and swirl it around, and then you're done. It's very easy. And it's not as painful or uncomfortable as doing a COVID test.
What about, you started to talk about it, and something that interests me a lot. I'm an immunologist, as I said, and that's where I get involved with the Candida yeast infections and sometimes the bacterial vaginosis. It's really about the microbiome. So I'm just curious now, one of my approaches to this, which has been successful, and unfortunately, sometimes I've seen gynecologists that haven't been as successful in treating, for example, candida, because they give them a couple of pills and just hope they get better. I take the approach that diet's important because, again, in my cases, patients who are taking a lot of like high sugar diet, sometimes dairy will flare up the candida yeast infections. I also use antifungals for longer periods of time. The vaginitis is from, again, I'm talking about candida, it's from intestinal dysbiosis that causes leaky gut that the yeast antigens, whatever, go to the vaginal area. Tell us more a little bit about what Evie does in evaluating the vaginal microbiome test, because that's a little bit confusing, to doctors and patients. Okay, as you mentioned, lactobacillus is a good bacteria to have in the vaginal area because it does inhibit other bacteria. So tell us a little bit more about that. What's the ideal, or how does, I mean, if we're going to say, how does a woman get the ideal vaginal microbiome?
Hi, everyone. I know you may already know from listening to my podcast that I specialize in treating patients with toxic mold exposure. It's become a serious problem for many years as we deal with the hurricanes and floods throughout the country. Even simple bathroom water leaks from a toilet in your home over time can contribute to mold buildup. I can help patients that suffer from the symptoms of toxic mold, but I also rely on the patients getting their current residence inspected so they are not continually being exposed. My go-to person for mold exposure is Joe Reese. Joe is a certified mold inspector with decades of experience. He is super thorough and gives you a straightforward assessment and tells you whether it's safe to live in your home or if there is mold. I should know, I used Joe when I moved to my new home 4 years ago. Fortunately, when I moved in, I smelled an unusual odor in my basement, and I immediately called Joe. He came over with his instruments, and he found the problem. Afterwards, I had remediation, and the problem was solved. Joe does inspections all throughout the country. He welcomes calls to his cell phone at 908-451-4592. You can also reach him by email at jprconsultants7929@gmail.com. Remember, mold in your home is not a good thing, but thankfully it's a problem that can be fixed.
That's a great question. So Evie's results give what's called relative abundance information for the vaginal microbiome. So if the vaginal microbiome was a pie, you get to understand what each piece of the pie is composed of. A healthy microbiome, the vast majority of the bugs present are going to be various lactobacillus species. So essentially, you want 100% of the pie to be made up by lactobacilli, or very close to it.
I'm going to stop you on that too, because what's really interesting, I interviewed Dr. Mark Pimentel, who's like an expert microbiome researcher on the gastrointestinal tract. And what he says, and again, I don't mean to, contradict you, but what he says in that situation that the healthiest patients have the most diverse microbiome. So I'm just curious. So in the vaginal area, that's not true. You want more of a overabundance of the lactobacillus to dominate.
Correct. This is one way in which the gut microbiomes and the vaginal microbiomes dramatically differ. So there is a scientific index called Shannon Diversity Score. And so that measures exactly what you were talking about, the microbial diversity within a microbiome. And as you'd say, you would want a high diversity score within the gut because having different types of bacteria is actually favorable in that environment. However, in the vagina, that is not the case.
That's
And
it.
there is a wide body of literature across many different geographic locations. So not just, say, like a Caucasian North American or European population. We're talking across India, China, Sub-Saharan Africa, and the trend is the same. The higher the Shannon diversity score, the poorer outcomes that people have related to fertility and pregnancy specifically.
Oh, wow.
So,
I'm going to get to that later too. That
yeah.
was very interesting. I didn't know anything about that.
So actually, diversity within the vagina is a bad thing. Typically, we like the term diversity and we think it's good. But when it comes to the vagina, you actually want low diversity. You want to be dominated by lactobacillus species, and that's tied to not only your risk of vaginal infection, the recurrence of those infections, but also really meaningful reproductive health outcomes.
That's very interesting. Let me ask you, because I'm looking at an Evie report right now, which thankfully I appreciate you sent to me. And it has on one of the reports, the Evie microbiome scores. And this particular report that I'm looking at, I think the patient had Gardnerella bacterial vaginosis, but it said the protective score was 0%, which is not good. That was out of range.
Right. We
The
do see folks who
microbiome
are completely
diversity score,
dominated by unfavorable bacteria.
right, the microbiome diversity score, now I'm understanding this better, was 1.0, which was like at the lowest level, which is not good. And the disruptive score, what they were calling it, which was very high, 82%. What does that mean, the disruptive score?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
So that means what percentage of the vaginal microbiome is made up of bacteria that are known to cause infection or other poor outcomes. So they are known to be bad for the vaginal microbiome.
Okay.
Now, in some cases, in particular, if those disrupted microbes are made up by like one type of bacteria, you can paradoxically get a low diversity score. So the diversity just measures like how much of a single bacteria you have. It is possible to have a low diversity, but actually like be completely dominated by bad bacteria.
Okay, so in this case that you sent me to was interesting. The patient was diagnosed from the swab with bacterial vaginosis.
Mm-hmm.
She had Gardnerella, 56%, Prevotella, 26%, and Lactobacillus, 18%. And she had some mild excessive discharge and moderate odorous discharge.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, so what does something like this tell you, that, you know, these are all way above normal levels that would be in a healthy...
Yes.
Vaginal.
And you raise a good question here, because there's been a debate for a very long time within medical and scientific communities about whether or not having any BV-related bacteria is quote-unquote normal.
Right.
And with this study that you mentioned at the beginning in the New England Journal of Medicine, it showed that for people with vaginas with BV, if you treat their male partners for BV with a particular combination of antibiotics, then that makes it much less likely that the female partner's BV would return. And this is helping us to understand that BV microbes are sexually transmitted. And so there had been previous studies that had shown people who were quote unquote virginal with no BV, with BV microbes present in their vaginal microbiome. However, those studies are thought to be flawed. Like, they were asking patients about sexual activity in front of their parents. They were asking only about penetrative intercourse and not about other sexual activity.
Good
and
point.
So we're now understanding better that probably, technically speaking, no level of BV microbe is quote unquote normal. The question is at what point does it tip over into causing symptoms or causing increased risk of other reproductive health outcomes? I tend to think of BV kind of similarly to how we in the medical community think of the human papillomavirus in the vagina and cervix. It is possible for those viruses to sit there and do nothing for a very long time. But then maybe your immune system takes a hit or something happens and suddenly your pap comes back positive. It doesn't mean that your partner was cheating on you then, because those viral particles, they can sit around doing nothing for a very long time. And it takes that second hit for them to become a problem. I think of BV microbes as being the same way. Maybe when you were a kid, even before you had sexual contact, maybe you tried on your cousin's wet bathing suit or something like that. BV microbes were introduced at that stage. I think it's probably an uncommon situation. Most people are actually probably exposed to some kind of sexual contact, whether or not it's intercourse or something else. But maybe just that small amount of microbes, they sit around for a while until your vaginal microbiome is disrupted for some other reason. You took antibiotics that wiped out your lactobacillus population. You know, you sat in your wet workout clothes too long. You went through menopause, your estrogen went down, there was then less glycogen in your vagina, and glycogen is what feeds Lactobacillus species. It's like there are all sorts of reasons
Right,
why the
food is
vagina can become
combination.
disrupted. And that's kind of how I think about this ecosystem and how I think about BV microbes.
Why is it? I was reading also the some of the papers and the studies, like there's like a 50% relapse rate, man. And I mean, they were saying, which at first it sounded very exciting, well, you treat the male partners, it was significantly better, but they still had like a 30% relapse rate.
Yes.
Why is it so hard to treat this?
So that's a great question. And I want to preface this by saying that Evie just published a paper in a peer-reviewed journal last year about our treatment outcomes for BV. So we had 1,000 patients test with us and get diagnosed with BV on our platform. They went through a full treatment program with our telehealth network, and then they elected to pay for a test again. And on average, that second test was done 4.5 months after treatment,
Okay.
so fairly far out.
Right.
And this was done prior to Evie offering male partner treatment. So male partner treatment was like not even a factor yet at this stage. Our recurrence rate at 4.5 months out was 30%, so lower than you saw in the New England Journal study with male partner treatment. And here is why I think that is. So in this study, we were able to see that our treatment programs not only reduced the amounts of BV bacteria, so the antibiotics are going in there and they're killing the BV-related bacteria, but we were able to successfully rebuild Lactobacillus populations. Like on average, we were able to increase Lactobacillus relative abundance by almost 60%. And that's really dramatic. And so that's, I think, a key piece of the puzzle to keeping BV at bay. I suspect that when we reanalyze our data in the setting of now offering male partner treatment on top of all of this, that our recurrence rate's gonna be far under 30%. So we're already doing well, but male partner treatment is gonna help us even more. And that's because our treatment regimens are different than just giving a vaginal antibiotic like you would normally do for BV. We do a couple of things differently. The first is that we start with boric acid to break up the sticky bacterial films that these bacteria can produce and make it more challenging for antibiotics to actually work. We do that for about a week before we do the vaginal antibiotic. And then after the vaginal antibiotic, we do a course of vaginal probiotics that contain Lactobacillus species.
Okay, this is very interesting. This is fascinating, and I appreciate you going through that. I actually would like you, if you wouldn't mind taking us through a little bit step by step, how this whole thing works. So a woman suffering, having vaginal symptoms, either itching, discharge, uncomfortable, whatever reason, decides not to go to a gynecologist, can't get in to see him in time. What do they do? Do they go on the internet and they
Yes.
contact them? Take me through what would happen, what a
Yes.
typical woman would do, and what would how everything would have like samples being sent, et cetera, and the time level.
Yes.
Take me through that.
So someone could come directly to the evie.com website and order their own test directly there. And that's
Okay.
where the majority of our patients find us.
And
We
it's one
have.
test, like they don't have to decide or select. I mean, it's the basic vaginal test.
Yeah, our vaginal health test is typically what most people order. There
Okay.
is an added panel called the expanded panel that you can add on that does PCR testing for STIs. So if you think that you may have an STI for any reason and you
So
want
a
to rule
second
that
dipping
out,
disease, you mean like
you can
syphilis
add that
or
on.
gonorrhea or something.
But
Okay.
if you're like, I think I just have BV or yeast
Right.
infection, I'm not concerned about an STI,
Right.
then you can just order the regular vaginal health test.
Okay.
And so that will get shipped out to you. It'll arrive within a couple of days. You can take the swab very quickly and activate the kit at home, using, your evie.com login. You can activate your particular test. So many of our patients are patients who have repeatedly seen providers in person
Right.
and still have recurring symptoms,
Right,
and they
right.
just want to get to the bottom of
Okay,
what's
maybe like something
happening.
starting up, they're nervous, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. So then you receive your results and you would hold that results report in your hand. We have a similar patient-facing set of results that's very clear. And at the top it says, like, do you have an infection or not? And if it says, like, do you have BV? Do you have a yeast infection? What kind of infection do you have? And that
Right.
has been diagnosed by our telehealth provider network.
If you've been following the podcast, you may know I practice holistic functional medicine and immunology. In fact, at Mitchell Medical Group, we've been treating chronic fatigue patients for 3 decades. It's critical in this work to have a trusted pharmacy that can compound medications for our sensitive patients' needs. ITC Pharmacy has been our go-to pharmacy the entire time. They can make medications ranging from thyroid hormones to dye-free medications for all of our highly sensitive, even allergic patients. If you or your holistic doctor are looking For these very specific patient medications, you can contact ITC at 888-349-5453. They have licenses throughout the country and can have medications delivered right to your doorsteps. My patients have been so pleased with their service, and you will be too.
And then somebody has...
meaning, obviously, he hasn't examined them, or she, but that they looked at the report, and the report was you know, clear enough to them that they could inform the patient. Now, do they speak to the patient, or is this just a typewritten response? I mean, how does that work?
So here's the interesting part. Evie actually asks a lot of detailed questions about symptomatology, medical conditions, and other types of habits.
When they send the specimen in?
Yes, we ask a lot of questions when they activate their test. And so the clinician is reviewing their symptomatology, their medical conditions, and the test results, and making a diagnosis based on that asynchronous consult.
Right, because a 20-year-old versus a 65-year-old, there could be a very big...
Yes, you know, exactly. Right. And, you know, when somebody's menopausal, probably atrophic vaginitis due to low estrogen is playing a part in what's happening. And so you're absolutely right that age matters.
Okay.
And so they'll receive a very clear diagnosis about what's going on. Okay. And then they can also opt into treatment with Evie.
So the doctor's reviewed it, he's made his decision. Mm-hmm. How is the decision conveyed to the patient?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So they'll get a notification that their results are ready. They can log in and they can review that set of results just like the one you were holding in your hand. And that includes the diagnosis as well as a very detailed explanation
They don't speak to the provider.
No, everything is asynchronous. We write out a clear treatment plan for folks and then they can decide if they would like to receive that through our telehealth network. Or many times people take the results to their own doctor and get prescriptions there. It's whatever their preference is.
Yeah, I'm sure that their own doctor would probably be a little upset. So how does it work that, so let's say they find this out, they have Gardnerella, they have Candida, you know, yeast infection, and they need medication. So then your treating doctors, I guess, whoever do it, they will put in a prescription to the patient's pharmacy. Again, the protocol that you were just mentioning, let's say if it was bacterial vaginosis, first a week of boric acid suppositories, then I guess a week of oral or topical Metrogel.
Typically vaginal Metrogel followed by a vaginal probiotic. And right. You'll notice that I'm mentioning a lot of vaginal products here. So a subtlety is that we do call in antibiotic prescriptions for positive STIs same day to the patient's local pharmacy. For vaginitis treatment, however, we have a custom compounding pharmacy, so we ship the treatment directly to a patient's door from our compounding pharmacy. The reason for that is that you can't get boric acid suppositories from, say, like, you know, your local Safeway pharmacy. They won't have that.
Why is that? Why?
That's a good question.
I mean, I think you can. You can't get boric acid suppositories.
No, you can get it over the counter essentially from like Amazon, or you can, and it's hard to tell exactly what ingredients are going to be in that. The safest place to get a boric acid suppository is from a licensed professional compounding pharmacy.
Oh, from a
And
compounding pharmacy.
yeah, and so ours is made with very clean ingredients that are not going to otherwise irritate the vagina. It's
How many
shocking to
of your
me.
vaginal areas, obviously, a very sensitive area. How many,
Yes.
and some women are a little bit sensitive even about putting in suppositories. How many times a day do they typically have to put in, let's say, a boric acid suppository? Once a day?
Once a day, but typically at night, right as they're getting into bed.
Oh, that's the best time?
Yes, because then you're going to be lying down and things are less likely to, due to gravity, come out. We typically do not recommend more than one vaginal treatment a day. That becomes quite complicated for people. That's too difficult to take. But once each evening works really well. So then our pharmacy also will send the vaginal
Okay, you have a
antibiotics.
pharmacy. You have the bevy pharmacy.
We have a partner compounding
A partner with a
pharmacy.
compounding
Yes.
pharmacy.
And we've found this to be a really great approach because then it allows us to custom compound our own vaginal probiotics and make sure that the ingredients are, vagina friendly. And then it also allows us to do things like we have our own compounded version of vaginal estrogen, for example, because generic versions of vaginal estrogen that you can get from your own pharmacy have parabens and sulfates in them. Which, I mean, can you imagine putting something with parabens and sulfates on your vagina like multiple times a week indefinitely? Like something that's supposed to soothe irritation is actually made with known irritants. So there are advantages to use of a compounding pharmacy.
So your compounding or your probiotics that you use, because I see on your reports here, obviously you have the different forms of lactobacillus, then there's one I can't even pronounce, Meiji bacillus, then there's Prevotella, and there's, I guess, Snithia. I'm not even familiar with these. These are all, I mean, so somehow you're looking at this and saying, okay, this patient would benefit from, a special kind of probiotic vaginally. It's got more lactobacillus.
Yes, exactly.
That's going to help.
Yes. And we can make it with clean ingredients without irritants, hypoallergenic. And so we can have full control over the compounding process. It can be very challenging to find a science-backed vaginal probiotic on the market. They exist, but more often than not, they're not ideally formulated or they might have irritating ingredients.
When would the patient really need to see their gynecologist in person and have the exam? If you're worried about pelvic inflammatory disease or something, if things aren't getting better. I mean, what's your threshold? Let's say with a patient, if they don't get better, that they better go see their doctor.
Well, we ask folks to make sure that they don't have an urgent medical problem at the time that they're filling out their questionnaires with us. If people have severe pelvic pain, indications of an infection fever, they need to be evaluated immediately. This is not a reasonable time to use telehealth services in any way. So if any people have a range of symptoms that can be caused by more dangerous infections, such as severe pain, nausea, vomiting, fever, heavy bleeding, anything like that needs to be evaluated in person immediately. But I think you were asking a more nuanced question about, if you fail treatment, well, then what? And certainly what I would say is, let's say that you come to Evie, you get a test, a diagnosis, and then you receive treatment, and you never get better from that treatment. So Evie clinicians are available to answer questions about what's happening with your care and give you advice based on that. But I would say it's never a bad idea under those circumstances to go and get an exam in person either.
Is that where the telehealth comes in? Because I see, I know you published a paper on, managing of the vaginal microbiome testing and telemedicine. So let's say a patient's been on treatment or whatever, too, they can arrange a telehealth visit with one of your providers to go over their
We
case.
don't do any live consults, but they have the ability to message during their treatment to receive advice.
Really? Okay, so there's nothing live. Okay.
Right. And
Okay.
so I think if people want to speak live with a provider, that's perfectly reasonable. And I think, folks can access that care locally. I think what's challenging in this space is there's an OBGYN provider shortage generally. Like half the counties in the United States don't even have an OBGYN in them. And so it's about trying to expand access to this very specialized care because even some OBGYNs don't feel especially comfortable with vaginitis diagnostics and treatment. And so it's nice to be able to provide this care in a more accessible manner across
Especially
regions.
for you, because medicine has changed so much. And I know even in my own kind of practice, because I love doing the physical exams, but doing a vaginal exam is not probably the most pleasant thing. Do you feel that it's less necessary now because of this kind of things? I mean, does it give that much added benefit for a patient Because when they go to a gynecologist, I'm sure like 90% of the time they're going to get a vaginal exam.
Yeah, and I think you're raising a really good kind of existential question about the future of vaginitis diagnostics. And I actually this week just had a phone call, and I won't name him, with one of the vaginitis academic sort of old, like traditional old guard, but very extremely well-known and trusted professors in the US when it comes to vaginitis. And he was talking to me because he had gotten an EVI test for one of his patients when he didn't know what was happening. How he really thought that, of course, in his experienced hands, vaginitis diagnosis is very accurate with an exam and looking at a swab, a slide under a microscope. But he said, you know, the latest generation of doctors, you know, like me or folks who are a lot younger than I am, he said, you know, they just don't have the skills to do this well. They just don't know how to do it. And he's like, I wish I could clone myself so everybody could see me, but I have like a 12-month waiting list at my
Modest.
academic center and we can't clone me. And so he said that he definitively felt as though molecular diagnostics, specifically next generation metagenomic sequencing, was the future of vaginitis diagnostics for that reason. And he had said he was going to say this at a big national conference this summer. So we got pretty excited about that. And it's great when you've got vaginitis experts using EVI tests and calling you to tell you about it because you can't get these results from any other commercially available test at this time. Like it just doesn't exist.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, treating men. Do you think now this is the game changer? I mean, this paper and everything that now women are going to insist, that if they're not doing better or any way that their partner should be tested, and actually can EVI test and treat their partners, or they have to go to like their own primary doctor or urologist or something?
There's actually no established test for BV in men, so we treat presumptively.
Well, I thought they do the same swab of the penile area, no?
No, so it's presumptive treatment.
Okay.
So if their female partner has BV, you presumptively treat the male. It's sort of like if a female
Who's going
partner
to do
has
that?
gonorrhea, you presumptively treat the male partner.
Right. So
You don't have to test them.
who's going to do that? So you guys won't do that, right?
We do, yes, we prescribe to male
You will. So
partners.
let's say
Yes.
Mrs. Smith finds out she has, bacterial vaginosis, and she went through the EVI protocol or whatever. And maybe even happens a second time and she doesn't get better, you would either suggest, or if she brings it up, you would treat her husband, for example.
Yes. So anytime somebody is diagnosed with BV, so what's interesting is in this Australian study that was in the New England Journal of Medicine, it wasn't technically among patients with recurrent BV, and that's like three or more cases in a year. It was just people with BV. And so we offer it to anybody with BV based on the way that that trial was designed. You don't have to wait for it to be recurrent in order to treat male partners. So we offer that, you know, suggest it to patients with a BV diagnosis. You may want to get your partner treated. And so female partners can actually purchase a voucher, kind of that then their male partners can redeem and then have an asynchronous, meaning like they fill out a questionnaire and a provider reviews it and prescribes to them. Or men can come directly to evi.com's site. And, you know, they attest that their partner has BV. Perhaps their partner was diagnosed by their gynecologist in person, but the male partner can't get in to see their own doctor. They can come and attest that their partner has BV and they can receive a prescription from us without any kind of testing. Just because, you know, if somebody says, yes, you know, my partner has BV, we trust them when they say that.
Let me ask you about candida vaginitis. So again, as I said, something that I see, and I'm not a gynecologist, but as an immunologist, I see a lot of the failure cases. And as I said, they're complex cases. But I just wrote a book on it, actually. It's called Concrete Candida. But it's not just about vaginitis. It's about the other systemic effects from candida overgrowth in the gut. Vaginitis just happens to be one of the more obvious ones. But I see people with sinusitis. I see people with skin conditions, related. But I was just curious, so how does EVI, because I didn't see that one, that sample, how do you treat a woman that comes in, that goes to your portal, that's been having recurrent vaginal yeast infections? Because I have my method. I want to hear and compare it to yours.
So, what's great about EVI is the test distinguishes between candidal species.
Right.
And so, if it's albicans, you're going to treat that differently than if it's glabrata or cruciate or like what are the other options? Because we
Right.
know that the fluconazoles are not going to work on
Correct.
those categories. So, we have that information from the jump.
Okay.
And so, that really helps us decide. Now, there are specific protocols for people with prolonged and/or recurrent candidal like Candida albicans infections. Right now, we don't have specific protocols for covering that.
How would you treat? Would you treat topical, oral, topical and oral? I'm just curious in
general. We typically do oral fluconazole, but we do more than one dose.
How many do you do, like three doses?
We do two initially with the option to sometimes get a third from the provider with messaging back and forth, depending on symptom response.
Okay.
Because oftentimes one dose doesn't work. We are also, you know, buffering up the vaginal microbiome with vaginal probiotics.
And you don't make any recommendations regarding diet or anything else really with them? You don't find that?
We do have blog posts around diet, and we have vaginal health coaches that people can book a free coaching call with, and they are able to dive into lifestyle modification very deeply with people. They are absolute experts in lifestyle modification around vaginitis, and people can have a free 20-minute call with a vaginal health coach as part of their test.
Yeah. Just from my, again, experience, you know, for what it's worth, and again, why I wrote this book, Conquering Candida, recently, you know, for 20, 25 years along with my wife, been in practice with Dr. Ricky Mitchell, we were seeing cases of recurrent vaginal yeast infections and sometimes bacterial vaginosis. And the story commonly was patients that had been on chronic antibiotic usage, either for acne, but on the tetracyclines, which really wipe out the microbiome, or for Lyme disease, or chronic sinus infection, steroids, or also being on the proton pump inhibitors, all of these things, microbiome disruptors. And what we found was that these patients, not only, you know, the women had, in some of the cases, had vaginitis. Sometimes they had, you know, onchomycosis, like fungal infections on the top.
Right. Because I also imagine you're seeing immunosuppressed folks as well.
Well, they're not immunosuppressed. I'm calling it, they're really, it's their microbiome as well. These are, you know, if you looked at their cell counts, their T cells and B cells, again, that's my area, they're normal, but they have overgrowth. And what I found, and I really base a lot of my work on Dr. Marjorie Crandall, who was a PhD microbiologist, who wrote a book, I think called Overcoming Yeast Infections. And she was a sufferer herself, but a very smart, tough scientist. And she always advocated, and I kind of took the clues from her about treating for longer courses. She felt that with Candida especially, it can get intracellular, it can be resistant, that, you know, sometimes a minimum of 2 or 3 weeks.
I'd like to take a moment to let my listeners know that my new book, Conquering Candida, is now available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. If you believe you suffer from Candida, this is the first book in 50 years since the original book, The Yeast Connection by Dr. William Crook, to give credence to this underdiagnosed and undertreated condition. If you also want to understand gut health and the microbiome, I also believe you will enjoy this book. I do appreciate if you read this book to rate it on Amazon and provide your comments and a review.
I'm just curious, do you think, and I know I'm putting you out there on this, should my partner get treated? And my typical answer, and I'm starting to rethink this now, was that, well, if I think that their partner has Candida overgrowth from being, let's say, on immunosuppressive drugs or being a diabetic, I think then, yes, it's possible. I mean, I'm just curious, what's your opinion? I mean, it doesn't...
I think it's certainly physiologically plausible. Yeah. I don't think we have data out there like we do, you know, from Australia and the New England Journal of Medicine about, you know, treating male partners for BV. We don't have that same trial, to my knowledge, yet in the candidal space, but it's certainly a physiologic plausibility. And I think what we've learned is to believe women's accounts of what is happening with their own body, because our patients for years were like, I'm totally getting this BV from my partner. What are you talking about? You know, we're like, no, we don't know. And that's because studies probably hadn't used a combination of oral and topical antibiotics in the male partners, so they weren't seeing a meaningful difference in outcome. You know, we'd been studying it, but perhaps not the right way. And so I think patients were really getting gaslit in you know, their interactions with their providers about that, because providers would be like, no, it's actually transmitted. And patients would be like, yes, it is.
Dr. McLean, the last thing I'd like to ask you about before we finish up too, because I did think it was fascinating, was this whole idea of fertility and the vaginal microbiome. And I see, I guess Epi helps assess that. And I'm just curious about your success with that. So tell me again, after, because we were talking about, you know, a non-diverse microbiome being good to prevent vaginitis. What is a good, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of women out there that want to get pregnant. What is a good vaginal microbiome to get pregnant? And is there anything, again, by doing this testing, let's say someone's, you know, a woman's considering trying to get pregnant and says, I wonder if I should do a test and see if I, have a good vaginal flora.
Yeah,
Is somebody would do it?
I think it's a great idea. I think the vaginal microbiome has long been overlooked as a contributor to infertility, miscarriage, and preterm birth. That's not to say that there haven't been studies on these things, but I think in part because of how some of these studies were conducted and the fact that they didn't include male partner treatment for BV, we weren't necessarily seeing the benefits of treating some of these findings. Particularly in asymptomatic individuals. ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and the CDC both obviously recommend treating symptomatic bacterial vaginosis. But if people just have, BV bacteria in their vagina, but they're not symptomatic, they don't recommend treating that. But these same BV-related bacteria are known to impact the chance of becoming pregnant spontaneously, the chance of IVF success, the chance of miscarriage, both in the first and second trimesters, and the chance of preterm birth. And so I wonder if the previous studies, because they didn't include male partner treatment, perhaps didn't show benefit of treating asymptomatic BV in these populations. And I really think that we have hope now, understanding that BV is sexually transmitted and knowing that these studies need to be repeated, taking that into account, or patients aren't just going home and getting reinfected while they're pregnant. And so then,
Wait, I'm
you
sorry.
see no
You
benefit.
said it's the BV that's making it harder to get pregnant.
It's some of these same BV microbes. So we at EVI provide three categories of insights to people who are interested in fertility. The first is we provide a protective score, and that's like how much lactobacillus do you have? Because higher levels of lactobacillus have been shown to result in more success with spontaneous pregnancy, IVF, carrying a pregnancy to term. So we provide that score. The second is we actually provide the Shannon diversity score. And when you ask, okay, what is the diversity score that you need to become pregnant? That is somewhat variable across geographies. So in Europe, there are studies that show anything even above 0.9. So certainly by the time you get above one, that you're in concerning territory. However, if you look at studies from like India, China, Africa, it gets to be a little bit more liberal. So we set a cutoff of 1.5 based on the totality of all of the literature across geographies. And so if somebody has a higher diversity than 1.5, we're going to say this may end up being a contributing factor to your reproductive health outcomes. And then third, there are very particular BV-related microbes. So it's some of the Gardnerellas, Prevotellas, Sneythias, Fanny Hessias, ureaplasmas that have been specifically associated with poor reproductive health outcomes. And these are all BV-related bacteria. But what's interesting is even when they're present in small amounts, and even when somebody's asymptomatic, you still are seeing this connection with poor reproductive health outcomes. And we actually analyzed our own data. We haven't published it yet, but we had over 1,000 patients come to us, not because they had any vaginal symptoms at all. They denied any symptoms. They were just interested in their fertility. And we found if they even had 2% of these microbes, either a single microbe or in totality, if you just add it all together, of these specific fertility-related BV microbes, that their chance of self-reporting a diagnosis of infertility doubled. So we're
Are
even.
the IVF clinics using your stuff? I would think they
Yeah,
would too.
We're conducting a large-scale trial with the largest network of IVF clinics in the country, doing EVI testing 2 weeks before and on the day of embryo transfer.
Oh,
So
wow.
this is becoming,
This is becoming
a
more
really
standard.
hot topic in
Yeah, it should be.
fertility.
Yeah.
And so we offer these insights to patients if they say that they're interested in becoming pregnant. And then if somebody says, "Listen, I'm trying to get pregnant now, or I'm going to try in the next 6 months," we explain to people, listen, like we don't have trials saying that treating you with antibiotics when you're asymptomatic is going to improve your chance of pregnancy. There is physiologic plausibility to that, but we will offer you treatment because if you in your mind assess the risk versus benefits, and honestly, the risks of a vaginal course of metronidazole and some probiotics is extremely low. We're talking very cheap, non-invasive
Could
treatments.
you just do probiotics if it was the case too in certain
You
situations?
could, it would probably be better than nothing. But because we know that in the cases of symptomatic BV, we're able to shift the vaginal microbiome to a much more favorable state with a full regimen, we offer that to people, which I admit is controversial since ACOG and the CDC don't currently recommend treating asymptomatic BV. We explain the research to people and what it says versus what it doesn't. And a lot of people who honestly are paying $15,000 or $20,000 for a really invasive cycle of IVF, they're like, sure, I'll pay an extra, couple hundred bucks to do your test and get treatment, you know,
Yeah.
when like the risk of vaginal metronidazole is almost
Yeah, you
nil,
need to
you
cover all
know.
the bases for
So they're
sure.
like, I just want to cover all the bases here. I think it'd be different if we were using oral antibiotics and it was disrupting the gut microbiome. Like that might be a different story. Like the risk versus benefit ratio there might be different. But with a localized treatment, most people are like, of course, I just want to try to deal with this. And so because we only started offering this, it's been less than a year. Tracking pregnancy outcomes for people who are trying to get pregnant. You know, we're only just starting to get outcomes in now. So we are following that, and I hope that we're going to be able to publish on it. Because this is, I think, the future of medicine. I mean, if you look at fertility clinics, they were already giving people pretty extensive oral courses of antibiotics based on the endometrial microbiome, which has pretty mixed outcome data aside from recurrent implantation failure. And it's like, this is a much less invasive test because it doesn't require an endometrial or uterine biopsy. You know, it's a much cheaper test. That test is super expensive. And then the interventions are less invasive. You know, they're topical treatments, not oral
Right. Yeah. Because
treatments.
again, when I've seen a lot of patients with IVF over the years, a lot of them develop candida overgrowth and yeast infections. Well, this was really an amazing conversation. I learned so much. Dr. McLean, is there anything you think we've left out that you want to mention before we finish?
Oh, that's a tough question. Here's the other thing that I think is really interesting about Evie. We have very motivated patients, and we've tested 100,000 people, I think, at this stage. We have a 98% opt-in rate for research. So we have the largest data set on the vaginal microbiome in the world. And I think this is going to be really powerful for really drilling down on the unique microbial signatures associated with some of these fertility and pregnancy outcomes. And then the vaginal microbiome is also related to the chance that you acquire an STI like HIV, the chance that your HPV infection progresses to cervical cancer. And I think it's really exciting to be on the forefront of that discovery. So I think that's the final note I'll leave everybody with.
That's great. All right, Dr. Kate McLean, thank you for taking the time today. The company is Evie. I think the test is really valuable to any of our female listeners that are struggling with recurrent vaginitis or struggling getting pregnant. And also, just sometimes bring along your partner, might be important.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Kate. Okay, that was great. Really interesting.
Thanks for joining me here on UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell. If today's conversation was useful to you, please share it with someone who could benefit. You can find every episode of The Smartest Doctor in the Room wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, stay well.